For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everybody. This is another episode of Stargazing, a Dallas Stars podcast. And we are here doing a little Texas Stars discussion. And we try and do this a couple times a year. We have Stephen Meserve here with us, the brains behind 100 Degree Hockey. How you doing, Stephen?
Doing really well. Enjoying the mini break that we get in the AHL for the All-Star Game, which peek behind the curtain is happening right now as we're recording this.
Yeah, I think the Central's puck drop is in about 4 minutes, if I have that right. And we have a lot of Texas Stars there, including head coach Neil Graham.
Yeah, a total of four Texas Stars coach, and then Maverick Bork, Logan Stankoven, and Matei Blumel. So it's a big year for the Texas Stars in the All-Star Game.
And if you want to look a little further, you had ex-Texas star Riley Tufte winning the hardest shot competition in the skills bonanza last night.
Yeah, so. Definitely. There was a couple Texas Stars out there as well. So it's a good opportunity to see the best of the league.
So I warned you ahead of time. I was going to blame you for the recent collapse of the Texas Stars. And so if we do a little timeline here, we had our first discussion at the beginning of the season. And I think you and I both kind of agreed that this was going to be somewhat of a down year for Texas. A lot of young players. And in fact, I think if you look at it, Texas is the youngest team in the AHL this year. And so there were going to be some learning curves and probably playoff skill level, but not top of the division. And then the team kind of put themselves at the top of the division. And then you wrote about how maybe this had changed and immediately everything collapsed. So why did you do that, Stephen?
Well, I accept full fault and blame for this activity. No, it was one of those things where, yeah, we agreed that it was, you know, we weren't sure what this team was going to be. Goalies were maybe average, a lot of turnover, both in the forward ranks and the defensive ranks. But they were doing really well. And we said, maybe this team is for real. Maybe we shouldn't make plans for May. Maybe we should make plans for June in terms of travel and leaving Austin. But yeah, the team has had a really rough stretch here where since the new year turned over, they've gone 3-10 and some really rough games in terms of the scoreline, some hard to swallow games in terms of the results against Central Division teams that they need to beat in order to stay ahead in the race. They were first in the Central heading in to the year, which is why Neil Graham is the head coach of the Central Division All-Stars. But as of the All-Star break, they're actually 14 points off the pace for first, which is held by former Texas Stars coach Carl Taylor's club, the Milwaukee Admirals.
At the turn of the year, Texas was maybe up 2 or 4. It was a decent number. So this is about a 16 or an 18 point turnaround in the matter of a month. And you just don't see that with all the loser points potential out there.
Yeah, Texas hasn't been getting to overtime as much in this stretch. I said it's 3-10, and it is actually 3-10. It's not, you know, 3-8-2 or 3-7-2-1. When they lose, they're not getting any points to benefit that. And so 6 points in 2024 has put them behind the pace, not only for first, but also for second place. So they've fallen into third. At this particular spot, tied for third at the moment, but the Grand Rapids Griffins, who have second, have a game in hand on them as well. Now, the good news, if you're looking at it, is that the Central Division is not great this year, to put it politely. The fourth place team behind them is below 500. That's the Rockford IceHogs. And so I find it unlikely, knocking on wood, that the Texas Stars fall below 500. However, that third place, you know, is, they believe, better than where they should be, based on the spot that they're in this year. But again, you know, the Admirals may have just rocketed to the top with this little string of play in January. And if they play their cards right, which I know they know how to do with Carl Taylor as their coach and former star Greg Rallo as the assistant, they're probably going to hold on to that, barring some crazy turn of events.
Yeah, and so I guess if you look at it, in our discussion at the beginning of the year, if you were going to say going into February, Texas is in a solid third place in the Central, you'd say that's kind of a win.
Absolutely. I think completely ignorant of how we got here, you'd be pretty happy with this outcome if you were sitting here on October 12th and having this discussion. But obviously, the ups and downs have made it a pretty whipsaw type of season so far for Texas Stars fans. And I think, you know, they probably aren't as bad as their 2024 record indicates, but they weren't as good as their 2023 record indicated either. They were getting a lot of help from scoring a ton of goals. They led the league in goals. They still do. They're tied with Toronto now, 3.66 per game, which is a ton of goals, but they allow a lot of goals. They get league average goaltending at best, and the defense has been hampered by injuries. We've got Gavin Bayreuther, who went out. Jared Rosberg is still out. Leon Bixel, of course, went over back to Europe. And so you've got guys who, you know, we're not supposed to be seeing as heavy of minutes as they are seeing. In the lineup every night, being asked to munch a lot of minutes, Gavin White, Artem Grushnikov, et cetera. And that is obviously taking its toll on their ability to keep the puck out of the net.
Okay, well, let's get into the detail. Before we do that, why don't I say a few words from our sponsor? It's playoff time, and the usual suspects are headed to Vegas for the championship. And our partner, BetOnline, is your number one source for football odds, stats, trends, and lines. With everything from point spreads to hundreds of bets on everything from the coin toss to the color of the Gatorade, BetOnline is the number one source for your championship wagering. Head to BetOnline and join today and get into all the action. BetOnline, the game starts here. So anyway, let's kind of start with the defense, since that seems to be a bit problematic. And here, you know, I think we recognized early on that this was a younger crew than we were used to. You know, you don't have Will Butcher around. You don't have Ben Gleason around. You don't have Ryan Shea around. But then you bring in somebody like Gavin Bayreuther, who you think is really the guy who's going to be first call up, a lot of NHL experience, Texas roots. He played for the Stars in the past, and he goes down for his game. So first off, what are you hearing about his status?
The good news is that Bayreuther is on the way back. He's supposed to be starting skating. He's been around the team. This is not one of those injuries. You know, it looked pretty bad at the time, right? Ankle injury, and he did undergo surgery very quickly thereafter. He should be back soon, but soon is a matter of obviously his recovery. You don't want to put his long-term health at risk. And so it's just a matter of probably several more weeks before we have a chance to see Gavin Bayreuther in the lineup for Texas again. As a reminder, yeah, it was the third period of the first game that he went down. And so he has barely played 20 minutes of hockey for the Texas Stars this year. So that's a tough loss. And then Jared Rosberg is one who, in talking to folks around the team, his injury has taken significantly longer than expected to recover. And he's still on season opening IR in Dallas. So even though
one of the few that's left from that.
Yeah, even though he is physically here in Cedar Park, he is on Dallas' season-opening IR, and that injury is taking longer than expected to recover. And so that's really not good for a lineup that could obviously use his veterancy and also just his grit.
It's kind of a small group if you look at what they – you really have Petrovic and Grushnikov as the two size guys, and they're playing together.
Yeah. They are. So, and you look at like the Kairou Pouliot line, you know, it's an interesting pairing. And I know there are some mixed opinions about it because as two guys who have similar sets of skills, right? Very offensive minded, and the defensive side is something that they both that Pouliot has needed to work on and improve, and then Kyrou needs to continue to improve. And also for him, his size is another thing. You know, I was talking to Texas GM Scott White about this, and you know, how does he compare? Who could he be? We talked about Thomas Harley and his offensive game and how the Texas Stars staff kind of broke down the defensive side of his game and rebuilt it to make him what he is for Dallas. And I, you know, we talked about that comparison, but then Whitey was very quick to point out that Thomas Harley is 6'3" and has 40 pounds on Christian Kyrou. And so there are physical attributes that are also important, and his time in the gym this summer building strength, building, you know, just overall power from his body is going to be very important to his future development for the Dallas Stars.
Well, yeah, and you saw something similar with Dallas with Nils Lundqvist, who is a bit slight as well. And he spent gym time this last summer. And so, yes, there was talk about improvement. But if you go into a board battle, you still see him struggling with players who have a little bit of size on him, and he gets bumped off the puck, and that's going to continue to happen to somebody like Kyrou.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's you have to be careful about who you pair him with and how you use that. And he is getting like power play time here in Texas, and that's something that's obviously good for his development. But as we often say with defensemen, it just takes a little bit longer, and especially with this when the size is a factor. That's something that you can't rush, and especially like you can't ask a guy to pick up 20 pounds in season because you're in the grueling part of just playing professional hockey. That's going to have to be something that happens in June, July, August, and he's going to have to come back stronger in September.
You've spent time with the team, so you kind of understand why they set up pairings the way they do. What's the team doing here pairing two puck movers in Kyrou
Derek Pouliot.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then similar type pairings with Petrovic and Grishnikov.
That's right. And Caro and White are the last two. So Gavin White is a prospect for Dallas, but then Michael Caro is a player who is on an AHL contract, but he's more of like a veteran type of player. And that kind of gives it all away, right? Which is every single pairing you've mentioned, Kyrou Pouliot, Grishnikov Petrovic, and Caro White. There's a vet and there's a rookie. And that's kind of the way that it's laid out. I don't think that I would trust any one of those rookies with another rookie, given the rookies that we have here in Texas right now. If we were having a different conversation and we had Leon Bixel among those that we could choose, maybe you feel more confident pairing rookies with rookies. But at this point, probably just need to go veteran and rookie so that they can continue to learn from that older, more experienced player who has the tenure in the league, both AHL and in Petrovic's case, plenty of NHL experience as well. And that's kind of the logic of that. The other thing too is, you know, with Bayreuther, Rosberg, and Bixel all gone from the lineup, that's half of a defensive core. And so they've also pulled up a guy from Idaho that they signed, Jake Murray, who probably would have been in Idaho for most, if not all, of the year. And he's been here for a significant time. And so think about that from top to the bottom of the lineup. That's your spread. There's a lot of variability there. And that is obviously hurting the defensive consistency and play because Murray is also a young player.
And, you know, he's gotten into some games. I think he's probably finding himself as the seventh defender a lot more these days since the whole team has been struggling. Talk to me a little bit about Gavin White, who has, at least on the offensive end, flashed a little bit and has started to contribute, at least with assists so far in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, White's gotten a little bit more opportunity to be offensive now that he's playing more. And talking to Scott White, no relation, about Gavin White, and he said that, you know, he's playing more than they expected that he would play, and probably that's showing a little bit in terms of, you know, things wearing thin in certain spots, his experience and his ability to, you know, play defensively, board battles, all those sorts of things. But he's a really smooth skater. Like watching him move laterally on the blue line, you could see that he just has top tier skating ability and puck distribution ability. But it's, as with so many, that defensive ability, the ability to you know, close down in the defensive zone, that's what he needs to work on. And they would obviously ideally have him in a situation where he would probably not be playing every night. You'd have him rotate scratches in that seventh role, and you could watch games, you could get a lot of practice in and be able to refine that part of his game. But injuries have put them in a weird spot with that.
Yeah. And to tell you the truth, I think one of the things that's really been killing the team has just been defensive zone coverage on the backside of the net, which, you know, I'm sure making that read and knowing when somebody's in a dangerous position is something that you get with more experience. But the Stars have given up a lot of tap-ins lately, or shots into wide open nets. And if you're giving up easy ones like that, you have to struggle to score on the other end. That's not a winning combination.
No, and there's just been, I think, some... It's tough because the X's and O's are, you know, all over the place. But it's, you watch and you see, it feels like the team is just not, like, in sync. They're kind of discombobulated in the defensive zone. Guys are open that shouldn't be open on the other side. And, like, watching this past weekend against Bakersfield, or 2 weekends ago against Coachella Valley especially, it was just a clinic. It was a surgical away game for Coachella Valley and Bakersfield this past weekend. Texas got lucky that they had a couple of goals, but they did not deserve to even have 3 goals in that game. They lost 5-3 ultimately. They're giving up shorthanded goals. They're giving up all sorts of things that they shouldn't. And it's really quite a turnaround from the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and I mean, you take a look, I don't know if the numbers held up after this last weekend, but Texas was going into last weekend as the number one power play unit in the AHL. But with the big caveat that with the 33 or 35 goals that they'd scored, they'd also given up a league-leading 8 shorties. So it's coming at some cost.
Especially after last year, they were one of the lowest, if not the lowest, number of shorthanded goals against for the whole AHL. So it's definitely coming at a cost. And it's not only obviously a cost in the scoreboard, but just the absolute momentum killer that a shorthanded goal against gives you. You can just see it, the way that the team attacks that after those shorthanded goals go in. It's a rough spot for them to be in. It's been happening a ton in this 3-10 stretch that they've been through. And I think just it's one of those things where, you know, fans were chirping at me on Twitter the other day that they should just decline the power plays at this point, because yeah, it's one of those bad feelings. But they shouldn't, because they are, as you mentioned, first power play in the league, but tons of shorthanded chances against and tons of goals against.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, what was it, Friday night, they gave, well, first of all, Friday night, I think they gave up 4 breakaways shorthanded on Matt Murray. So he had to feel a little under it. But they did, after they did give up the shorty, they came back and scored 20 seconds later. So it's just high event. But high event needs to be slanted one direction pretty significantly on the power play, and it's not.
It is, yeah, it's not. And it, a tough night for Matt Murray, by the way. It was his 26th birthday. Yeah. 26th birthday, by the way. And they did that to him. So, you know, you gotta give a guy some help on his birthday. So hopefully he got some cake or something after.
Have a little money on the board for that, right?
I hope so. I hope so, yeah. For sure. Yeah, it's been tough. And you mentioned goaltending. That's been, I think, a really tough spot. You know, talking to folks around the team, just that they've expected more from the goaltending this year. I thought with two guys who were here last year and guys who are battling to be the organizational number 3, it's been pretty average, to be honest. They've not stolen a ton of games, and they've gotten bailed out by the high octane offense that they've had from the forward group. And so that's been what's been saving them. And in this recent stretch, they just haven't gotten what they've needed.
Yeah, I think, I think JP on the broadcast said that Matt Murray hasn't won a game since he came back to the AHL. So his last win was the shutout in the NHL.
Yeah, exactly. When he had won an overtime game. Actually, he was the goalie of record in Coachella Valley.
But right. He has not. So that was started. He hasn't started a win.
Yeah, he came in. He happened to be the goalie of record because they did tie the game while he was on the ice, so it was his. But he hasn't started a win since he was in Dallas, and that just shows you his record has slowly ticked from being, 9-5 to 9-6 to 9-7, and now he's 9-9. He's just even on the season with an OT loss, if you want to count that in the negative column as well. The goals against is above 3, which is not great. It's not what they need. Texas is a team that's always prided themselves on being, when they've done well, it's been relatively low event hockey, and they have not had that opportunity this year. It's been a lot of run and gun type of feel.
Yeah, it has. And even when they have gotten decent goaltending, so, the last game against Bakersfield, they lose 2-1 to Jack Campbell, and Remy Poirier has a solid game, makes some key saves, but, he did have some rough chances, and you still have to get the win. And if the other guy's going to throw up a game where he's only given up one goal, you have to match him.
Yeah, and that was a really rough one too, obviously, because they corrected a lot of the mistakes they made on Friday night. They would probably admit it was one of their worst, if not their worst game of the season, where they lost 5-3 that night. And they put in a lot of video work and a lot of conversations about getting back to fundamentals. They did everything that they wanted to do, and they just got goalied. And to twist the knife, they got goalied by a guy who used to be a Texas star and is, kind of a cult player around here. And so that just kind of twisted the knife. And talking to Neil Graham after the game, just like, hey, what do you think about just running up against a hot goalie? And his quote was, I coach Jack. I love Jack. I wish him all the success in the world. Just not tonight.
Yeah. And he saved it for the next game.
Save it for the next game, because they're not playing Bakersfield again for the rest of the season. So find somewhere else to pull off a one goal against on 36 saves, other than that night in Cedar Park. So it was a rough way to go, but definitely a good opportunity, hopefully, for them to see that, when they put their best foot forward, two goals against is enough to win them a game with the way that they score most nights. So that hopefully is a step in the positive direction in terms of their ability to execute on the game plan.
Yeah. And here, I guess we started out with the negative side first here. And so I do want to move on to the forward group, but maybe before then, why don't you give me some thoughts? Who on the defensive side here has been a pleasant surprise?
A pleasant surprise on the defensive side. Honestly, I know that we just talked about him, some of the things that he needs to do better, and everybody has things they need to do better, but I've really been impressed with Gavin White, because I don't know a ton about him, honestly. As he came in, I knew what I had seen in scouting reports, but I've been really impressed, like I said, with his offensive ability to work the blue line, the fact that he's been pressed more into service, and that has led to greater scoring output from him, has been good. He hasn't shrunk away from the opportunity. So that's been a really positive thing for him. And I think he's young enough. He's got enough runway in front of him that he's still got an opportunity to really grow and build his game toward the NHL.
Yeah. And that would have been my number one choice as well. I may just throw a shout out there. I didn't really know what to expect from Artem Grushnikov, having only watched the one game really from last year. And that was not a good game. I've been pleasantly surprised. He is not as immobile as I was led to believe. And I think he's shown some growth this season as well.
Yeah, and his pairing with Petrovic has been good. They've got size. And as you mentioned, the one game that we saw him in, most of us saw him in last year, it was that game against Milwaukee. It just did not go well. It was the deciding game. And they got a lot of defensemen pressed into service because of injuries, who should probably not have been playing at that point in the season. And that was just a tough spot to be in. So good for him to get a reset and ability to come into his rookie season clean.
Okay, let's move on to some more positive stuff. Let's talk about the forward group. And I guess we have to start with Logan Stankoven and Maverick Bork.
Well, we should.
One, two in scoring. So
I say the whole league starts with Logan Stankoven and Maverick at this point. And I will point out that as I'm looking at the lineup for the Central Division's first game, Neil Graham decided to start Stankoven, Bork, and Matei Blumel as his three players on the ice for the 3-on-3 tournament, which I love from a homerism standpoint for Neil Graham.
Not?
So I'll have to ask him about that later. But I mean, yeah, everything this season has run through those two players on the offense, Stankoven and Bork. And talking to Scott White about Stankoven for another piece that I'm working on, I asked him, like, did you expect this? And he said, you never expect this. This doesn't happen. Because think about it. Logan Stankoven is a rookie, and he is leading the league in goals. He's leading the league in points with 51. The next closest rookie isn't even on the first page of results. And the first 20 results, and he's a rookie in this league. And then the guy behind him, Bork, is at 48 points. He's a second year player. He's wearing an A, by the way, for the Texas Stars, which is not a decision that comes lightly from Neil Graham and the leadership group there, because he's a second year guy and they have a lot of guys that they could put a letter on. So it speaks a lot to the way he carries himself on and off the ice. And there's good news there. Like, they're obviously scoring in bunches. They have great chemistry. They're expecting that chemistry will carry through to the NHL when they both go up at the same time, hopefully, for those guys. But also, they've been keyed in on a lot as the depth on the forwards has been hurt by some injuries and the bottom six has not been scoring as much. And so it really speaks to their skill that they've been keyed in on so much by opposing groups, but they still continue to score at such a prodigious pace.
The thing is, you take a look at the losing streak and Stankoven and Bork have maintained their point pace as it goes on. So if you're looking for a problem of what's causing this team not to get there, you really don't look at these two.
I mean, it's about once a month that Logan Stankoven has a game where he doesn't have a point. He's had four of them in the entire season. It's
just
absolutely
nuts.
Crazy. And that just, as I said, it doesn't happen. You don't expect that. And one of the knocks on Stankoven when he started, when everybody looks at him, is like, oh man, that's a small guy. He's a small guy, but he hasn't been afraid to go into the tough areas to try and just deke around an entire team. There was a play he had against Coachella Valley where he came from behind the goal line all the way up to the blue line, went through, I think, every single Firebird, and then dished off to White, who dished to Bork and scored. Like, he's not been afraid to make the plays and really use his speed and elusiveness as a weapon. And that's why he's leading the league. And obviously odds on favorite to win Rookie of the Year. And heck, we might be having a conversation about whether he's Rookie of the Year and MVP, which is insane. But it's something that we're saying out loud.
Yeah, you have to, because, I mean, 51 points, that's already shattered the rookie record for Texas, if I remember correct, and it's still going.
Yeah, it's still going, and you know, you look at the point totals in the NHL, regularly now, at least, you get guys who are above 100 points. I can barely recall the last time you got someone above 100 points in the AHL. It's extremely rare that happens, but that's the kind of pace that Stankoven is on to be in that 90s. The highest that anybody's ever gotten on the Texas Stars is in the 80s. I think high 80s was Travis Morin the year they won the cup. So he's on pace to shatter the Texas Stars record. He's going to go toward the top of the recent, you know, past decade or so if he continues this pace of AHL scorers. And like I said, odds on favorite for rookie and MVP. The funny thing is his best competition is Maverick Bork, who's right behind him on the same team, on the same line. So this is a pretty incredible pairing. And there's no doubt that whenever the two of them come up, they will be tried together on a line for the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, I've looked at this a little bit. I'm kind of hoping that they don't, just because I think there are some things that Bork brings to the table that could be useful to some of the Dallas Stars veterans. I would love to see Bork between Jamie Benn and Joe Pavelski, for instance.
That would be a lot of fun. Yes, and, it would be.
And I actually would love to see Logan Stankoven in Mason Marchment's spot with Duchesne and Sagan. So again, this may not happen because obviously, unless something changes with injury or something like that, you may not see these guys up in Dallas this season. But if you do, they bring some dynamic first at a much more affordable cap level, but also in a way where I think they could hit the ground running and be contributors immediately.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things for them to both polish off in their games. One of the things that I've heard mentioned for Bork is faceoffs. Yep. He is a centerman. He distributes the puck really well, good passing, assist numbers, but his faceoffs are sub 500, sub 50%, and he needs to tick that number up because that's where he is going to be. Now, who knows, maybe he starts on the wing or something like that as well, but if you want to be relied upon as a centerman in the NHL, faceoffs are paramount. And to that point, Stankoven is actually listed as a center, a center slash forward. A lot of times they use that F designation in the AHL to just kind of be a general purpose forward designation. But with Maverick Bork a little bit banged up, kind of he has something nagging that he's been dealing with for the past month or so. They've been rolling Logan Stankoven sometimes on the faceoff dot. And so that's another thing for him to continue to develop, because you love to have as many centers as you can. It seems like guys who could take faceoffs, guys who know how to be defensively responsible. And so that's another piece of the puzzle for actually both of them, even though Bork is the one who's playing center generally on that line.
Yeah, and I think that's probably been a problem for Texas all year, is they're a bit weak on the dot. And I think probably the only real reliable that they have out there is Oscar Beck. And so he comes in those situations where you have to have it on the defensive end. But even on the power play, I think it hurts a bit because it's so often they lose the faceoff, it gets sent down the ice. And so they're losing 10 or 15 seconds every time they get a faceoff in the offensive end.
That's very true. And it's especially difficult after last year. They were one of the best faceoff teams in the league with Rhett Gardner.
Yeah, Rhett Gardner. Absolutely. Yeah, exactly.
Best faceoff guy in the league. And you lose him to the Philadelphia organization and as a free agent. Yeah. Beck is probably the best guy that they've got. And, Oscar Beck is what he is at this point. And, having him on the power play just to win faceoffs is not exactly the plan that Texas wants to roll with. And so they face that challenge of, like you said, losing 15 seconds every time because they're going to just dump it and they have to reestablish. And this is actually a team that I've noticed when they're not clicking on the power play, they have a ton of trouble with zone entries. And that's actually where they've been getting bitten sometimes too with their shorthanded chances. Yeah, turnovers that turn into shorthanded chances and they go the other way. They try and do something fancy. They do the drop back and nothing wrong with the drop back, but they just get stopped up at the blue line. And
it's almost like the second unit is better at zone entries than the first. And I mean, some of that is just, Tony Strongis is kind of a wizard at getting into the zone. So that helps out a bit, but there's no real go-to guy on that top unit who can just get across the line and get established.
Yeah, it is really difficult. Like Logan Stankoven will try to break in sometimes with speed, but it seems like the second he does, he'll be draped by, all three guys who are up on press coverage. Like it's very difficult for that first line to get established for sure. And I think that they've succeeded in spite of it, but their plus minus on the power play, if that were such a thing, has been not great over the past couple games here because of that shorthanded challenge that we mentioned before.
Yeah. So let's talk second unit a little bit here. We have an all-star we haven't really mentioned yet, Matty Blumel. And he's kind of jumped around a little bit with partners, but he spent a lot of time with the Swedes, Freddie Karlstrom and Oscar Beck. And he's kind of gotten his goals in, I don't know the best way to put it. They're almost like bonus goals because he is not really out there with some guy who's absolutely clicking with him offensively. He's carrying the offense on that second line.
Yeah, he really is. He started on the season on that first line with Stankoven and Bork, and then they switched him around for Curtis McKenzie on that top line. And he's been on what would casually been called the umlaut line, because whatever reason, Texas decided this year to start adding diacritics and accent marks to player nameplates, and all three players on that line, Blumel, Beck, and Karlstrom, have umlauts on letters in their names. So it's a nice little bit of symmetry there. Karlstrom had a hat trick in Manitoba, and since then has just been completely snake bitten. And he'll admit it as much as anybody that he's just gripping the stick and not doing what he needs to do there. Beck has always been more of a defensive forward, and so Blumel has really been, like as you said, carrying the offense on that line. And it's been interesting to watch the way that group has played. It does, as we mentioned, though, because they're not as offensively dynamic, it means that, I'm not saying that opposing teams can ignore them, but it means that they can put their best players out against Bork and Stankoven and McKenzie, which, again, puts more pressure on them and makes it harder for them to do what they do. So it's one of those gaps where, you know, do you argue Texas has a first line, two third lines, and a fourth line? Maybe. You know, maybe it's one of those situations, but I feel like that's Mate Blumel slander at the same time. So it's a really tough spot to be in because you don't want all of your top scorers on one line. You got to try and distribute it.
Yeah, and I mean, part of the issue here is when the team was gathering a bunch of points, Riley Damiani was playing fourth line, and he's kind of the dynamic guy on the third line right now. And so that's one of those things where if you can have three lines that are threatening and even a fourth line that can kick in on a fairly regular basis, all of a sudden you can't just key on that top line. And so the lack of depth that the team through a variety of reasons, one of the big ones being injury, it's cause and effect where that top line, they're still getting their points, but they aren't getting on runs. And I think, you know, just seeing those guys where you can't put your best on them and shut them down, I think that just adds to the enthusiasm of everybody on the bench, and the team kind of gets on a roll.
Yeah, and we haven't even mentioned the forward injuries. If you mentioned Damiani a second ago, and his line mates, should be his line mates, Scott Reedy and Nick Camano, have both been out. And Reedy sustained something several weeks ago and has been out for a while. And Camano ran kind of awkwardly into the boards. He hit his head falling backwards into the boards and has been out for a week and a half now, I think three games total. Those should be the two wingers on Damiani's line, but instead you've got Semenoff and you've got Kyle McDonald. And so those two players are both rookies, and you know, McDonald is still working on his 5-on-5 game. I don't have as much tail of tape on Semenoff, but between the two of them, like, those two should be playing the fourth line role. But instead you've got them on a third line role with Damiani. And as of the last game, Texas actually rolled 11-7. Because of their forward injuries. They had Keaton Mastrodonato, who's an AHL guy, and Stranges officially on the fourth line. But honestly, lines were in the blender all night. The very first time, like, they had the sheet that they hand out to us in the press box, and the starting line was not even on the lineup sheet. It was that much of a blender. So, you know, they're really trying to piece some things together.
Well, if I remember right, JP threw out at intermission after the first that he didn't think that Jake Murray had gotten a shift in the first period. So it's not really even that they're running 11-7. There are some guys there who aren't getting time.
They're running 11-6, I guess. I mean, and Texas has some history, although Neil Graham hasn't done it, but Derek Laxtal a few times ran a player, Matt Mangine, if you remember that name, mm-hmm. back from the memory archives, at wing. He was a defenseman who was more of an offensive defenseman, and they would play him on the right wing when they were running low on forwards and they had injuries or something like that. And he was actually pretty good at it, for what it's worth. So not out of the realm of possibility. It's the kind of crazy thing you see sometimes in the AHL or in the ECHL when things like that happen.
Or even in the NHL. I just watched a couple of games with Mark Pisick playing last weekend. So there are guys who can do it.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, Reedy and Camano are not the only injuries. There's also Chase Wheatcroft, who's a player who Dallas fans might know. Just he was a free agent signing, and he's a Dallas prospect. He honestly, it was a weird injury that happened to him. He kind of got shoved over just seemingly innocuously at the blue line and fell awkwardly and looked like some sort of lower body injury to his right leg as he fell. And so that's another guy who's out. And then Ben Berard, one who's an AHL contract, has also been out for several games. And so that's a total of four bodies out. Stranges just came back. He would have been the fifth body as well that was out. So you've got four forwards. You've got a defenseman, Bayreuther, who's out. Rosberg, who's been out. Bixel, who left. So, you know, this team has turned over quite a bit in terms of the injury department, and that's affecting a lot of things for them. They're just trying to get through this thing.
Yeah, this is the first year in quite some time, I think, where I've seen this many Idaho Steelheads coming up. Because I mean, you mentioned, you know, Keaton Mastrodonato. You know, he was running on a point-a-game streak down in Idaho. Who is it? Jack Becker. Jack Becker's gotten three games now. He's kind of a larger physical guy, but also performing very well down at the ECHL level. Jake Murray probably would be getting some pretty good minutes down there. So there's a bunch of Texas Stars who very likely should be playing in Boise. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I think it's hurting the Steelheads a little bit too.
It definitely is. And you also mentioned like the goaltenders that they had. They didn't play any of the goaltenders that they had come up when Murray was in Dallas backing up. They had a couple of guys that they could have called, and they signed a guy on a PTO. And he did not touch the ice. Remy Poirier played, you know, six or seven straight, even some back-to-backs. Just, you know, that's a tough thing. And you know, we talk about organizational depth of the third goaltender, but something that a lot of Dallas fans don't think about is the fifth goaltender, which is crazy. But Dallas doesn't have one this year. Dallas has four goaltenders. They don't have a fifth goaltender. And that means that the organizational depth is stretched when some injury happens anywhere along the way, right? Whether Jake Ottinger's hurt or Matt Murray's hurt, you have to have a guy that you can trust to start games in that fifth slot so that your AHL team doesn't suffer. And so there's definitely been a lot of call-ups there. Idaho's been just decimated by call-ups to the AHL. And it's not all been Texas. They've gotten call-ups to, you know, Abbotsford and Bakersfield and Utica,
Ontario,
like all
yeah,
over the place, Ontario, Syracuse,
yeah,
all over the place, all over the league. And it's good for them, right? That's good opportunity. And this is one of those weird things where when that happens, it's actually good for Idaho, maybe not this year, but it's good for them next year and the year after, because guys see that, oh, I see, if I go there, they do well. I do well. I get an AHL call up. Everett Sheen, the head coach there, is going to let me go and have, you know, a great time in the AHL and promote me and be the guy who says, like, yeah, this guy's doing great. You should definitely take him. So it's good for their overall culture and the building of, like, continuous building of them having a good reputation among players within free agency. Because if you remember, all ECHL contracts are one-year contracts. There's no such thing as a multi-year contract in the ECHL. So you got to win them over every single year. And yep. So that's one of those things that just you don't think about a lot, but having a system where guys can get up and out and find their next opportunity easily continues to build that bench of guys who say, I want to go play in Boise.
So how do we fix all this mess?
Wow, that's a great question. I don't know. If Neil Graham hasn't figured it out, maybe it's not possible to figure out. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you aren't going to get a whole lot of Neil Graham hate out of this podcast. So, yeah, I think he's the right guy for the job. I was going through your article about how the team was better than we thought they were going to be. And the quote that you got there was that it might be rough early on, but that the team should start to gel by Christmas. And yeah, we probably haven't seen that, but I think there are maybe some things that we could do to get a little more organized and get off the losing streak. And I think one, it probably has to do with tightening some things down on the defensive end.
I think it'll be interesting to, you know, see what happens as they come back from the break. It's tough in the AHL because Texas played a game on Saturday and then skills competition is Sunday. Game is Monday. They get one more day off, and then they can practice on Wednesday. I don't know if Texas will or not, because they have to get on a plane on Thursday and then start playing games again. Now, they will be on the road for a little bit here. They'll have the opportunity, potentially. Maybe they get a nice, really good, solid systems-based practice in on that Monday after they play some weekend games. They'll be in Rockford or Milwaukee, depending on how the travel works out. You know, maybe that's a good opportunity for a reset. They're really getting into, unfortunately, the meat of the season, where you won't have these long breaks between games. Texas has a lot of those long breaks between games during the fall because they try to bunch games in the spring after college football and NFL football are over, so that you get as many of those games where you're going to get high attendance as possible. They're not going to have an opportunity to have like a mini training camp, back to systems basics type of situation. And so it's really going to press the skill of the Texas staff to ingrain those things without wearing down some already beaten down bodies and get those systems back to where they need to be. So it's going to be an interesting challenge for the team, but I know that it's been done before. I know a couple years ago they were really up a creek. About midway through the season, and a similar situation, you know, they went kind of a back to basics type of strategy set of conversations and had one of the best records in the AHL from that point forward. But unfortunately, they had already dug themselves a pretty significant hole and they ended up right around 500. And so like that was a Neil Graham led team. And I know that they can do that. It's a question of, you know, when do they find the time? And also like, does a team buy in? I think they will. It's a will skill type of thing too.
And here, you know, I think one of the things that'll help is just having the all-star break here where coaches out of town, top players are out of town. Everybody else resets for a couple days, maybe get this losing streak monkey off the back and just start without thinking that the first thing that's going to happen is something bad.
Right.
And so if you get to that point where you just say, okay, it's the beginning of the season, let's go play hockey, not worry about the baggage that you have coming up to this point, I think that would help this team a lot.
I know some of the players, you know, you can't do what some of the NHL players did and go fly to Mexico for a week or something like that. But I know some of the players were trying to take shorter trips. At least one of them was going to drive up to Dallas with the family, do some different things. You know, enjoy some of the culture up there. Just a little bit of a reset, get away from the rink. Don't put the skates on for a few days. It does wonders for you. You know, we forget that like these, when we're all taking our break from work on the weekend, these guys are doing the work so that we can enjoy our weekend. So, you know, a little bit of a break for them mentally can be really important in the middle of this just absolute grind of a season.
Now, before we go, I do want your thoughts on one other guy. We have another rookie who's in double digits in goals scored, who kind of came out of nowhere, at least as far as my observations are. Tell me a little bit about Kyle MacDonald.
Kyle MacDonald is a power play specialist, to be sure. It's actually really interesting the way that he's popped up. You know, a lot of his goals are power play goals. So he scored 11 as of right now, and 7 of those are on the power play. Last I checked, he led all rookies in that category. He's a big body. He's had an opportunity to play that sort of out front, net front bumper role for the Stars power play. But in talking to folks with the team, you know, he needs to continue to work on his 5-on-5 play. That's where they really need him to mature. Like they obviously love that he could be that role for them on the power play. And that's where he's putting in a lot of points. But 5-on-5, is where
some defensive coverage issues.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's true for a lot of
any rookie favorites,
but 5-on-5 stuff is where he needs to continue to mature. It's great that the power play is working for him, but you're not going to get power play time your first time getting called up to the NHL. That's not how this system works. And so he'll need to continue to mature that. But again, he was sort of a free pickup, if you will. They didn't use a draft pick on him. He was an undrafted guy that they signed as a free agent. And so great pickup for them so far. Lots of opportunity for him to continue to grow through his entry-level contract.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing that stands out to me is that, you know, he has a very quick release from that bumper slot. And the bumper slot, whether it's power play or 5-on-5, he finds space in the center, and he's kind of a decent sniper there. He'll pick corners.
Yeah, he could do a really good job in tight there. As I'm looking at it, he is tied for 11th overall in the power play, but he is number one. Tied for number one in rookie power play goals. And so it's been his specialty. They're not sad about it, to be sure, but he needs to continue to grow with all the things that happen when there's also five players on the other side of the ice. And that will give him more opportunities to move up the lineup.
Okay, well, let's wrap up a little bit. Predictions coming up for the rest of the year. What unusual things are you going to predict happen? So who's going to surprise us in helping this team to keep a playoff spot?
That's an interesting question, to be sure. I will say that I think that in order to get what they need, they're going to need their defense to tighten up more. We know that. That's obvious. I think that they're going to have to get like a player like, you know, Riley Damiani or Antonio Stranges to play more of an offensive role. I could see, you know, we talk about, I feel like we've been talking about Stranges for years on these podcasts because he's just such a dynamic player that people like to watch. I think if he can pay off his promise in the back half of the year, he's a player who could drive a line, you know, add him with Damiani, Stranges, and, you know, someone like Camano or Wheatcroft has been coming on nicely.
I've loved this trio since I saw him in Traverse City 2 years ago.
It could be Stranges, a lot of fun, right?
Stranges, Damiani, and Oscar Back.
Oh, that'd be an interesting combo, right? They'd have to break up Back and Karlstrom to do it, but you got a little bit of everything on that line, right?
Yeah.
That's a really interesting call. I think, honestly, that they just need someone to key the rest of the offense. That's going to be a big piece of it. I'm hoping that Matt Murray and Remy Poirier are resting their mental faculties during this time and really like focusing in for the back half of the season, because you know, it doesn't get any easier from here on out. The games are closer together. There's more of them, it feels like, and teams have figured everything out about this team. In terms of predictions of where this team falls, I don't think they drop below 500, like I said. I don't think that they drop below third, but I think they're a better team than the Grand Rapids Griffins, who are in second. So I do think that they snipe home ice advantage for the first round of the playoffs, and they'll probably end up playing Grand Rapids. But from there, looks like Milwaukee is a buzzsaw, and they might win the division yet again.
Yeah, and you have Nashville that's sitting out there and not likely to break that group up.
Exactly, and that is honestly an interesting thing that happened last year, if you recall, that Milwaukee lost a lot of players down the stretch to Nashville, and they almost, you know, almost got into the playoffs in the NHL, and then they dumped all those players back to the AHL, and they just mopped up. They certainly mopped up the Texas Stars, who lost guys to the Dallas Stars. And that's one of those dynamics, right? Is Detroit in or out? That helps Grand Rapids or doesn't help Grand Rapids. Dallas obviously looks to be in the playoffs, which means they're not going to get any assistance, although there's nobody up in Dallas really right now that would even come down. So, you know, that's not as much of an issue for Dallas or Texas. The one thing I think that all of us are looking for and all of us are waiting with bated breath to see is whether or not Dallas makes some sort of move in order to get Maverick Bork or Logan Stankoven into Dallas before the end of the season. You know, whether that's a trade or a waiver or something like that, what do they do? Or do they let them both sit here in Cedar Park and start the season next season with them penciled in to the Dallas lineup? That is still, I think, the major question. And then for Texas Stars fans, let's say that, you know, good for them, Bork and Stankoven go up to Dallas. Let's say both of them go. The bottom kind of falls out of the Texas offense. And that's a really rough, rough position for this team to be in. So you're rooting for the players individually, but if you're a Texas Stars fan, you're also rooting for them to make it next season.
Yeah, exactly. And at that point, you better have your fingers crossed that Bayreuther's rehab plan is a little ahead of schedule. And then, well, you know, it's always next man up. So somebody else needs to step up and fill in the gap. So that's a big gap to fill, but there are a handful of guys who at least have some potential.
Absolutely. And that's the mentality. And they want to just, you know, drive to that next goal. And right now they're just trying to reset and get themselves back to, you know, back to their winning ways. And so that's what they're going to try and do starting this weekend against Rockford, and oh boy, a big one against Milwaukee.
Yeah. It's not absolutely getting down to crunch time where you need the wins, but at this point with the losing that's been going on so far in 2024, you really need to see some breaks start to go the right way.
Absolutely, and they'll look to do it.
Okay, well, thank you for spending time here. Why don't you give all the people out here how do people read your stuff? Where do they go to learn everything they need to learn about the Texas Stars?
Absolutely. So 100degreehockey.com. You can definitely check us out there. We're also on Twitter/X at 100 Degree Hockey as well. And then if you're interested in all of this and the background and all the nitty gritty history of the Texas Stars and what it means to be a fan of the AHL or a media person covering the AHL, then you could check out the book that I wrote with Sean Shapiro, which is called We Win Here. You just go to wewinhere.com to check that out.
Great book, nice chapters that you can sit down if you have a little bit of time and just go chapter by chapter. Good stuff. Well, thanks again for taking the time out, Stephen. Fingers crossed Texas gets this thing turned around, and hopefully we have a chance to talk during the playoffs.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.